Good evening, everyone. You are listening to the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. My name is Dana Pretzer. We're located on virtual channel W3957. That's on satellite at scaredmonkeysradio.com, at kickradio.com, and wherever else you can pick us up. It's great to have you with us. Remember, our new webpage is located at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can pick up all the past shows, listen to the show live with your media player. You can hear podcasts of commentaries and everything else that you can do. Great show planned for you tonight. Stan Livingston, he's a former child star. Remember the show My Three Sons? He played Chip on there. He's going to be here to talk about the Actors Journey Project. Plus, about these stars today, the Lindsay Lohans and the Paris Hiltons and all that. What's the difference from being famous today than it was when Stan was, not that he isn't famous right now, back in the 60s? Then Brooke Hart, he's the attorney for Dog the Bounty Hunter, will be here to clear up just what's happening with my friend Dwayne Dog Chapman. And then Ronald McKinnon, he's taken his case to try and protect his child right to the New Jersey Supreme Court and then to the United States Supreme Court. And he's trying to prevent his child from being taken to Okinawa, Japan. He'll be here to talk about that. And then LaDonna Meredith from the Let's Bring Them Home Foundation will be here to talk about the Kent Jacobs case. That's an important one. That's here tonight on Scared Monkeys Radio. Glad to have you. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. It's always a pleasure to have on Stanley Livingston. He played Chip on My Three Sons, and he has an excellent project going on right now called the Actors Journey Project. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. I thought I'd bring Stan on tonight and talk a little bit about the difference between being a star today, and not that Stan isn't a star right now, he's in our books, to being a star on television back when Stan was in the 60s and early 70s, and what's going on with Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan and all that. Stan, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks, Dana. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you here. You're always welcome on the program. Let's get going with, because I know your time is limited tonight. I brought you on mainly tonight. Of course, we want to talk about the Actors Journey Project, and I thought we'd start with that, and then we'll get into what's going on with these so-called, quote-unquote, stars of today, the young folks.
Well, there's a lot of people that are trying to do this, and, you know, I assume by that you're referring to, like, the Lindsay Lohans and the people that are in the news.
That's exactly
right. You know, I really have to kind of qualify stuff like that. I mean, yeah, it is news, and yeah, she does have problems, but, you know, for the vast majority of people doing this, and I don't think there's a week that goes by, that you don't see hundreds and hundreds of kids on TV and commercials, TV series, movies of the week, and at the theater. You know, I mean, people like that are really the exception, and unfortunately, when they do something, though, it does hit the news, and the news picks it up, and they love dwelling on it.
So it's not right for Joe Public to lump in all stars and starlets into that same rehab one day, out partying the next day category. There's lots of good kids that are out there that are earning a living by acting.
Well, I've been doing this 55 years, and I maybe have known five or six that have had a problem out of thousands and thousands. So, like I said, it, you know, the news unfortunately likes to pick up on bad news or news that's exciting or, you know, whatever they feel is controversial, and that certainly is. But for people that do this a day-to-day living, most of the people that are pretty normal folks and have normal families and, you know, lead pretty normal lives outside of being on TV. So, yeah, I really think the media does a disservice in trying to paint all actors, and especially child actors or teen actors, of the type that if they're attracted to this business that there's something wrong with them or somehow will pervert them into being a person, you know, like a Lindsay Lohan. Unfortunately, she is a singular individual. She obviously has problems. You probably don't need to look too much past her parents to know why she has the problems.
Yeah.
And, you know, unfortunately, that's the way it is for her. She's probably taken what could have been a great career. I mean, she is very talented. She's talented as a singer. She's talented as an actress. But she's made herself unemployable now. I mean, that's the detrimental side of, you know, kind of just doing whatever you want and the devil may care attitude. Is producers look at that, and as I mentioned before in your show, this is a business. It's not an art form. And when push comes to shove, producers who would be hiring her look at it and say, do I really want to take a risk on her and have that girl in my film? She's notoriously late to the set. If she shows up at all, that costs the company tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars. And then when it gets to the point that it is now, everybody who's in a movie has to be insured. You know, a completion bond is written, and they're going to look at that verdict and say, we're not underwriting her. Or it's going to cost you millions of dollars to underwrite her. Because what if she ODs? What if she doesn't show up? Where's your $80 million movie then?
Yeah, exactly.
So a lot of money's at stake, and a lot of times people do what they do, not really thinking of the other person's, you know, point of view and how it can all play out.
Exactly. Let's talk,
an unfortunate scenario.
Let's talk a little bit, Stan, about the difference between, you know, you've been in the business 55 years. That's a long time. But let's compare the child star. And I know Lindsay Lohan's 19 or 20 or whatever she is. So I guess she's not a child anymore, although she's acting like one. The pressure of the paparazzi and all that sort of stuff today compared to when you were in your heyday back in the My Three Sons era. Is there really that much pressure on these stars and starlets, or is it the old saying, any publicity is good publicity for your career?
I don't think any publicity is good for your career. I mean, not in this day and age. I mean, because if you do something negative, it just plays out. And like I said, you know, people want to work with people who are reliable. My age, you know, we had probably just as many people chasing us around, couldn't go anywhere. In fact, it may have been worse, because the difference is today, if you're on TV, you know, you're pulling in an audience of 8, 10, 15 million people. When we were on, there was 3 networks.
Right.
So, you know, on a weekly average, we were pulling in 50, 60 million people watching a TV show. So it's a huge amount of people. And, you know, I think the media was just as publicity hungry back then. I think, though, in my era, if there were problems, you know, those were kind of glossed over, and it was something really that the media didn't, chose not, volunteered not to cover. And they just felt that was your private life, and, you know, we'll look the other way for those sort of peccadilloes that you have. But in today's age, boy, if you stumble and fall or do anything wrong, there's somebody to cover it, and an hour later it's on the Internet, whatever thing you've done.
Without typecasting, back when you were young, did you try extra hard to behave yourself because Chip, the clean-cut kid, can't be talked about getting a ticket from a cop for having an open beer or whatever compared to what goes on today? Did you really have to work at that?
I don't think I had to work at it, but I think it was just my upbringing from my parents that kind of instilled a sense of responsibility in me, just in general life. And then, you know, I think it was incumbent upon me to kind of look at what may happen had I done something like that. And I'm not saying I'm squeaky clean or didn't do certain things, but afterwards maybe thought about it. Why did I do that? Boy, if I had been caught, that would have just been, you know, I might have been fired off the show or whatever. Unfortunately, luck was in my favor, and, you know, not that the things that I did were probably just things most teenagers do growing up, speeding in a car, drinking a beer when you shouldn't, you're underage. But, you know, had I been caught, it probably would have been very, very serious, maybe more so in that day and age. You know, where today there's just zero tolerance for things like that. You know, in my day, if you got caught drinking a beer, more than likely the policeman would have said, give me the beer. Yeah. Get in your car, drive home, and don't ever let me see you doing that again.
Right.
I mean, if you do that today, just the way the world is, you're going to be arrested, and, you know, you're going to be photographed, put in jail, and, you know, they're going to prosecute you to the full extent of the law. So it's a completely different age we live in terms of social responsibility. So I think, you know, the kids today, whether they like it or not, are just going to have to be more aware of that. And if you're in show business and have a career at stake, that's something, you really can't take lightly and really have to think about.
TMZ.
Curtailed some of the things you'd like to do just as a teenager.
Exactly. TMZ.com, the Internet, and I'm not picking on TMZ, but they're the best example right now of in-your-face type reporting on the Internet. Some of it is so stupid that I don't know why people even look at it, but obviously there's a hunger from the public to want to go and look at somebody picking their nose or doing whatever on the Internet. How does that help or hurt someone who's trying to stay in the business, get in the business? And let's tie this all into the project that you're working with, the Actor's Journey Project.
Well, like I was saying, you know, I think that in the world of today, you really have to be careful what you're doing, and I think everything today has to be planned. I mean, in the era that I got involved in this business, there really wasn't any roadmap to doing it then either. I mean, it was just a lucky break that I got that I was cast into something. Actually, I was cast as an extra. Mm-hmm. I ended up getting a speaking part, which allowed me to continue on as an actor. And I guess I fulfilled whatever they were looking for. But I think today people really, because of the nature of the business and the business is all around us and you can't turn the TV set on, obviously without seeing programming, but seeing programming related to making the programming and reality shows that dwell on it and entertainment channels that are set up to bring you the behind the scenes mechanisms of making movies. So it feels more familiar to people and it seems easier to get into. It's a deception because the part that's easy is really learning how to act. There are acting schools everywhere. It doesn't matter where you live. If you live in Pea Ridge, Iowa, or if you live in New York City, you can go to an acting school and get trained. The problem for actors begins after that when they go to look for work. And unfortunately, our industry has been around 100 years and has never really kind of divulged the type of information people need to know on a business level to sustain a career or to even launch a career. And that's why we came up with this Actor's Journey project. We thought it would be great to enlighten people, not on the craft side of it, not on the art side, but totally on the business side. That's what trumps all actors, and as I said, it doesn't matter where you get your training. You could have just graduated from Yale or Harvard Drama School, got out to L.A., and all of a sudden you hit a brick wall. And the brick wall is called the business, and it's like, what am I supposed to be doing 8 hours a day to get work, and how do I do this, and who do I call, and what's the order of things? How do I get an agent? What do I say when I get the agent on the phone? And that's the type of material that we put into the Actor's Journey project. Right now, we kind of divided it into two pieces. The part that's available right now is called The Actor's Journey for Kids. It's a four-part DVD series. We involved over 100 people in the industry. There are people that are in front of the camera, actors. A lot of former child stars were involved in this particular project. But even more importantly, we involved people behind the camera, the directors, the talent agents, the talent managers, the casting directors. And it really gives the actors a unique perspective to see what the other side wants from you. Because how do you please them unless you know what they want? So this is really a very unique opportunity, I think, for parents that want to involve their children in the industry or teenagers. The other half of our project is called the Actor's Journey Project, and it kind of picks up when you turn 18 years old, and it's for the adults. So, and that'll be ready in probably about 2 months. And the DVDs that are for the children or for the parents who want to involve their children are at theactorsjourney.com. As I mentioned, it's a four DVD set. It's available now, and it really gives you all the information you need to really consider whether you want to do this, and then if you do it, it's all the steps. It's basically a roadmap and a guidebook on how to do it. The information, as I mentioned, comes from people that have been doing this 20, 30 years, so their hard-earned experience really benefits you because you don't have to spend 5 to 10 years going through the ropes of learning the industry. You can know it before you start.
Yeah. How important is that? That's for sure. Listen, I know you're busy. I won't keep you much longer. Stan, you're a class act. I don't think we're going to read anything about Chip being in rehab or anything in the near future.
No, not anytime soon.
But listen, if that happens, give me a shout and I'll give you all the free publicity that you can.
You can mail me a file or a cake with a file in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Appreciate that.
Stan Livingston, thank you, sir.
Hey, Dana, thanks so much.
Take care. We'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Okay.
Stan Livingston, former child star, remember My Three Sons, great program for sure, and part of the Actor's Journey Project. We'll be right back. Hi, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show. If you've been following the media lately, you'll see that my friend and yours, Dwayne Dog Chapman, and his family have been vindicated in a Mexican court for going down and doing the right thing and capturing that scumbag serial rapist, Andrew Luster, or have they? We've now seen some conflicting reports coming out in the media that there have been some appeals filed. I hope for Dwayne and his family that this is finally over. What I thought I would do tonight is bring on one of Dwayne's lawyers, Brooke Hart, to talk about that. Good evening, sir.
Good evening.
Nice to have you back on the show.
Thank you very much, Dan.
When I saw Dwayne on TV the other night, or the internet, wherever it was, and Beth did a lot of the talking, which is usual for them, and she's very good at it. Dwayne is so emotional that it's hard for him to get words out sometimes. I was so happy for them. I sent them a congratulatory email, and I'm going to have them on my show here a little bit later on in the month. And then next day, bang, something came out in the media that maybe this isn't over. Can you clear this up for us, please?
Well, yes, I can. Both are correct. They are very happy and very gratified that the Mexican authorities have focused on the key issue in the case, and the Mexican court in Puerto Vallarta, the criminal court there, has dismissed the charges based on the expiration of the statute of limitations. Or to put it another way, Mexico allowed too much time to go by before taking action with regard to the warrant that Mexico had issued in July 2003. And the statute of limitations in Jalisco, the state where this is proceeding in Mexico, is 3 years and 3 months, and 3 years and 3 months ran as of October 15th, 2006. And the law in Mexico, in Jalisco, similar to 11 other of the 31 Mexican states, is that to interrupt the statute of limitations, the respondent must be before the court, and an arrest in the United States for extradition purposes did not accomplish that goal. So the Mexican trial court dismissed the case. The Chapmans are free. Leland and Tim and Dwayne are all free to travel anywhere in Mexico and in the United States. However, the Mexican prosecutor, as a matter of form, files an appeal. So he merely signs a piece of paper which says notice of appeal and files it, and the prosecutor did that in this case, and now the matter will go to a Mexican appellate court, and we will probably have an answer one way or the other within 60 to 90 days, perhaps a little longer, perhaps a little shorter, but it isn't over yet with the kind of finality that all of us are seeking.
And I think that's just it, the finality that all of us and hundreds of thousands of people across North America, millions, in fact, that watch Dwayne and his program, see what he has gone through. You know, he has used a good pile of his personal finance to fight this. He is the stress that has come across his family. But yet he continues on. He has that strength to continue on doing what's right. You know him better than probably any of us do. How does he cope? Is it faith, or is it just he wants to do the right thing?
Well, I think both. You know, he has a tremendous amount of personal faith and commitment to his God, and he has a kind of personal fortitude and conviction about what he's doing, where he continues to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. And, you know, in Mexico, when he captured Lester, he tried to do it properly. He brought with him a person who Dwayne fully believed was a Mexican police officer, which is what is required. And unfortunately, it turned out that that person may not have had the stamp of official authority that Dwayne thought did. But we haven't reached those issues yet, and hopefully we will never have to.
What does this do, Brooke, for the extradition process now that an appeal has been followed? Is that still...
That's a good question. I'm taking the position that extradition and any further steps towards it is no longer proper, and that the case is dismissed in Mexico so that there is nothing to extradite to. But this is a matter that will be sorted out within the next several weeks in Hawaii, and we will ask the court to rule on it if the government sees it in any other way.
We've all talked about the Mexican government, Mexico in particular, different topics, immigration, you name it. I see Dwayne Chapman as someone who, if he had to do this over again, would do it and go back down there again. Or is this a case where that person named Chapman will never step foot on that country soil again.
Well, I don't think that Dwayne has made any decisions about where he's going to go and what he's going to do. I think his commitment is to do things properly and do them according to law. And he believed at the time that he was capturing Lester that he was doing things properly. Perhaps next time he would take greater pains to contact other people to, you know, hindsight is 20/20, but he intends to do the right thing no matter what he does.
So as far as the appellate process goes, you say that it could be 30, 60, 90 days, whatever.
I think it's more like 60 to 90.
60 to 90 days. And once that process is done, is that it, or is there another step in the judicial process for the Mexican prosecutor to follow?
Well, it's an appropriate question, and as I understand it, if the appellate court affirms the trial court ruling dismissing the case on the ground that the statute of limitations has expired, that will be the end of it. There will be no further legal proceedings in Mexico and certainly none in the United States. But if the appellate court reverses and says that the trial court was wrong in its analysis of the Mexican statute of limitations and when it expired, then theoretically the process could start over again. And the interesting question is whether it's all over for now, and if they win on appeal, the Mexican prosecutors will have to start a new process and request new extradition proceedings in the United States, or whether in some way they will carry over to a subsequent ruling. I think the former rather than the latter.
This is a wide open question, and I'm not sure.
As you might imagine, these kinds of things don't happen every day.
No.
And there probably isn't a lot of charted territory on it.
Have you ever found out, Brooke, or any of your co-counsel, what the motive of the Mexican government was to let this go so long and then go forward with it? We can all speculate, and maybe that's not fair to do right now, but a lot of people ask that question. Why so long and why now?
Well, I think we're all in the same boat on that. We're left with speculation because no one in Mexico, to my knowledge, has made any public statement about why Mexico is doing this. One speculation that I have is that the United States, having started to cooperate with Mexico and Mexico with the United States regarding the extradition of major criminals, Mexico decided that it wanted the Chapmans back for whatever reason, perhaps because the Chapmans left without having resolved the deprivation of liberty case, a non-grave crime under Mexican law, and Mexico did not feel that its sovereignty was respected. But that's just a projection and a guess, and yours is as good as mine.
One last question before I let you go, Counselor, and I thank you again for coming on. Dwayne and Beth were on Larry King the other night, and Larry asked him, asked him a question. He said, are you going to retire? And Dwayne answered it somewhat clearly, but it could have been a little bit clearer for my liking. I don't see him retiring. I'm going to ask him this same question a little bit later on in the month, but what have you heard?
Well, I have no reason to believe that Dwayne is going to retire. I think that this past year has been very stressful, and
I'll bet.
And if we're able to conclude it successfully, and the proceedings are actually done, it wouldn't surprise me if Dwayne and Beth took a little rest.
Yeah.
But I don't see any retirement. And given the publication of their new book that just came out last week, "You Can Run, But You Can't Hide."
Love the title.
Excellent title.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot more activity ahead for the Chapmans.
Absolutely. And if you were to look up the definition of strength and courage in the dictionary, you would see Dog's picture in there and his family's, and we all admire him for that. Ricard, thank you for dropping around.
You're very welcome, Dana. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Brooke Hart, attorney for Dwayne Dog Chapman. We'll be right back here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
We will not falter, and we will not faint. Wanted, dead or alive. America wants them brought to justice. That's what we want, to get them running and to find them and to hunt them down. But we're going to smoke them out. Whether we bring our enemies to justice or bring justice to our enemies, justice will be done. Wanted, dead or alive. But make no mistake about it.
Now they got to catch him first. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll be back in just a minute here with LaDonna Meredith from the Let's Bring Them Home Foundation. It's a national missing persons advocacy group. And she's going to be here to talk about the case of Hope Mills man, I'm sorry, Kent Jacobs. It's a very interesting case that she'll be here to talk about. Remember, we can be heard on satellite W3 and 957. That's a virtual channel, kickradio.com or scaredmonkeysradio.com or wherever you can pick us up. It's always nice to have you. If you don't get to hear the show live, you can always listen to the podcast, which is usually available an hour or two after we finish the live program. We'll be right back with LaDonna Meredith from the Let's Bring Them Home Foundation. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. Let's Bring Them Home is a national missing persons advocacy group. And the family of missing and the family of a missing Hope Mills man, Kent Jacobs, seek public support. Kent Jacobs was last seen at 5 p.m. on Sunday, March 10th, 2002. Kent was last seen wearing his sweatshirt from Cape Fear Harley-Davidson of Fayetteville, North Carolina. Despite the continued efforts of the Jacobs family, law enforcement, and nonprofit organizations that specialize in missing person cases, the whereabouts of Kent Jacobs are a mystery. I thought I'd bring on LaDonna Meredith from Let's Bring Them Home to talk about the Kent Jacobs case. Hi, LaDonna. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
It breaks my heart every time that we do a story like this, but there are lots of stories, and one of my goals is to have a segment each and every show that brings these stories out to the public, so maybe we can help find someone. Let's talk about the Kent Jacobs case.
Well, Kent Jacobs went missing on March 10th, 2002, which has been five long years for the family. Our organization got involved last summer, and we've been to North Carolina twice. We've done everything we can up until this point for the Kent Jacobs case. Of course, we will never give up. One of the things that we did is we offered a reward, one of the largest ever offered in North Carolina, with the goal being to generate more tips. But we know our best effort right now and the most important key to Kent ever being recovered is that billboard that was erected for him when he first went missing. That's just right off of I-95 where he went missing.
Let's talk about that a little bit. How were you able to secure the billboard? Those things can't be cheap.
They're not cheap. Initially, it was the family that worked very hard, and let me tell you, the Jacobs family has done phenomenal work to bring their son and brother home. They negotiated a great deal with a company called Magic Media, who just generously donated this billboard. They were able to get the vinyl donated from another nonprofit organization, and it's been there for 5 years. But due to some recent storms, there was damage to the billboard. It fell over, and a new company purchased the billboard, and it's put the family in a bind.
How can people help the family get the billboard back, which is very important?
It's hugely important because of several reasons. One being the fact that the person or persons responsible for Kent's disappearance are in that town, and they have to pass that billboard probably on a daily basis.
Exactly.
The new company, unfortunately, are going to have to charge the family a discounted rate of $300 a month plus repairs for the billboard. So the community can embrace this and take a stand for Kent and for their family and say, I want to contribute to this. That billboard is a landmark, but also it's hope for that family, and it's the only way the public is going to be able to remember Kent on a daily basis. If that billboard's not there, it's going to be detrimental to the Jacobs family, and it's going to be detrimental to the case.
Have Let's Bring Them Home planned any sort of fundraiser to help the family?
Absolutely. We are committed to this. We are committed to that family. We are in the works right now of notifying the public, and one of the ways is through the show tonight. We have sent out press releases, and we are planning a fundraiser. We're going to go back to North Carolina. You know, this, we can't let this happen. That billboard needs to be there, and we're going to do everything that we can to make the community aware and get a joint effort so we can get that billboard back up and keep it up.
Helping families is everyone's goal. Being a family member who has a missing loved one, you know, it is so difficult to know how to ask the right questions or do the right thing. As an organization, when you come to the Jacobs family or another family, sadly there are lots of them out there, how do you approach your initial contact with them?
Well, our organization, our steadfast rule is that our services have to be requested by either the searching family or law enforcement. So we don't generally ever solicit our services, simply because there's so many cases out there, and we are so dedicated to our cases, and we have such a small staff. So the Jacobs family found us through a mutual acquaintance, and it's a unique situation with the Jacobs family. They had already done a phenomenal job to help bring their brother home. But they needed some additional help, and so that's what we've been able to offer them, and so that's what we're trying to do, even on a smaller scale with just this billboard. That billboard has to be there, and so, you know, that to us is important in his case as, you know, offering a reward or anything else that we could do.
How has the media coverage been in this case? Have they taken the story and ran with it, or is it hard to get them interested?
It has been a challenge to get them interested. And I think what we're seeing all across the board is that the community believes, not just the community there in North Carolina, but the nation as a whole tends to see missing persons as the blonde-haired, blue-eyed, you know, girl that goes missing, little, you know, the child. And what they don't seem to want to accept or embrace is the fact that a good number of people that go missing are adult men. They're elderly men. And in Kent's case, you know, he was an adult special needs man, and it's hard to interest the people, the media and the public in those types of cases. So it's been a challenge, and I commend the media outlets such as yours that are doing what they can to help bring Kent's case to the forefront.
It's so important to keep a story alive, so to speak. I don't like using that term, especially when we're trying to help find somebody missing, but to keep the story in the public or to keep the public interested. The public, LaDonna, has a strange fascination with news stories. We can see 20 minutes of Lindsay Lohan and her ankle bracelet, yet we have a story like this with Kent that you would love to have 5 minutes on a major cable news program. What do we do in the media and as public to get the cable organizations more interested and feature more of these types of stories rather than just the Hollywood schmutz stuff that we've been seeing for weeks and months now?
You know, that indeed is a good question, and I think my answer to that, although it's not an easy answer, is the fact that I believe as a nation we are desensitized. We are desensitized to violence, to these types of crimes. We believe it can't happen to us, and we live in a feel-good, give-it-to-me-now microwave society. And I think the only way that we can change the thinking of the nation is to make these stories real, to find the people like yourself or myself or the organizations that are out there that help these families, and they become a voice for the family. They stand up and say, you know, I'm a part of this organization. I'm a part of this effort to find this missing person. I don't even have a missing person in my life, but this is important to me, and I'm going to stand up for this family. So I think it's going to take a grassroots effort of people who can be that voice for the nation and make people wake up and see that this is an epidemic, it's a problem, and it's going to take each of us to stand up and open our eyes to do something.
Again, Kent Jacobs was last seen at 5 p.m. on Sunday, March 10th, 2002. Kent was last seen wearing his sweatshirt from Cape Fear Harley-Davidson of Fayetteville, North Carolina. LaDonna, thanks for coming on, and of course, we'll stay in touch.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Take care. Bye-bye. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. My name's Dana Pretzer. We'll be right back with Ronald McKinnon. Again, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. Okay, we're back. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. In my continuing coverage of parents whose children are taken to foreign land, in particular Japan, and abducted from them, we bring back Ronald McKinnon. A story from Japan Times. I'll just read you a little bit of it here. Despite Ronald McKinnon's fears that his child would be abducted to the the New Jersey Supreme Court in the United States recently gave permission for his divorced Japanese wife, Erica, to relocate with their daughter, to Okinawa. I'm sorry. On July 30th, the U.S. Supreme Court denied his stay, so Erica is free to leave. I guess saying that this is a nightmare that keeps reliving itself would be fair, and I wanted to bring Ronald McKinnon back on the program to talk about this. Hi, Ronald.
Hi, Dana. Thanks again for taking this story to heart and feeling for all of us parents that are going through this.
I feel for you, brother. I wished I could do more, but I think it's important that we tell the story. Since you were on the show last, tell us what happened.
Yes, well, we petitioned the Supreme Court of Jersey, and they 7-0, hands down, they sent her back to Japan.
Jeez.
And then I tried to petition the Supreme Court of the United States to grant a stay. They denied it, and then we resubmitted a petition, and the one justice gave it to the rest of the justices, so they all saw it, the Supreme Court of the United States, and they all denied my stay. My case has been riddled with judicial misconduct. I mean, I just, and it seems that the judicial immunity, there's nothing much could be done, and I see this with other cases, you know, that I've been following, or you know, I've heard of, you know, along the same lines as mine about, you know, these parents that their children are relocating to Japan because of our own courts. And yes, Japan has some major rehauling to do on their family laws, but we too need to prevent this before it gets to that point where they go to Japan. I mean, there's a few cases where the courts let these mothers relocate, and probably fathers too that we don't know of, relocate to Japan, and then they cut off all ties, and that's my fear.
Yeah.
That's my fear here with my daughter.
Well, this is your child, and we would all move heaven and earth to protect our children, and sadly, the United States of America and other countries, Canada included, haven't been doing what they can to protect their citizens. You mentioned judicial misconduct. You weren't able to talk about that last time on the program, but I'm asking you now, are you able to talk about that on this program?
Yes, absolutely. I have nothing more to lose. She's leaving this Sunday, and I want the public to know how corrupt our system is.
Our
system is so biased, and it almost seems like the judge picks who he wants to win in the beginning and just takes the ball and runs with it, and that was what happened in my case.
In the summation, or in the judge's ruling, we could probably do a whole hour program on this, and maybe we will someday, but our time is limited, Ronald. What did they say why the decision went towards your wife, favorable towards your ex-wife, and then we'll get into this misconduct?
They said they used the law that it was Juarez versus Lupus, and it was about a relocation to Wisconsin within the United States, which, you know, jurisdiction in New Jersey carries over to any one of our states when it comes to child. They use the same law to go overseas, and they based their decision on the fact that my ex-wife was depressed, and she didn't have any support here in the United States except herself. That's it.
Wow. You know, and it's, I'm losing the signal with you a little bit. Ron, are you on a cell phone?
No, I'm not. I'm on my home phone.
Home line, yeah. We're getting some static coming through, so hopefully the audience can hear you fine. I just shake my head. I'm reading the story. I've read it a couple of times, and it doesn't seem to change when I read it, because I want it to change to help you. This has gone, I guess, as far as it can go. Some will ask, is there any venue for you now, or is this over as far as the court process goes?
My attorneys are still trying to petition the Supreme Court of the United States, but I don't know how it's going to go now that they denied my stay. If they'll even hear the case, I don't know. And we're going to try that. And I just want more public awareness. I mean, I hope some of your listeners out there might be some bigwigs with some other venue where I could get my story out also, because this is an issue that's rampant throughout the United States. All our children are being sent to other countries, and the left behind parents have no recourse to get them back or visit them, and it kills us, all of us.
Judicial misconduct, that's a strong term. Let's get into that.
Well, this judge is, I mean, even to the end now, he's been out of the family court system for a year. His name is Stephen B. Rubin, and he's still taking on my case, even though it's not court procedures.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's still taking every motion that my attorneys file, he denies. Her attorneys file one, and he wants to hear the case. He's said stuff in transcripts that, you know, from the court hearings that are just so prejudicial towards me. And it just seems with the judicial immunity, there's nothing that could be done. I even filed a complaint with the New Jersey Committee for Judicial Misconduct, and it seems like it's just, you know, beat my head up against the wall.
I'm sure there's a huger, broader picture with each and every one of these cases. I'm going to bring this up, and I'm sure I'll be criticized for it, but what the hell, I've been criticized many times on this program before, Ronald. Let's talk about the he-she bias. And what I mean by the he-she bias is mom versus dad when it comes to custody. It shouldn't happen this way. The court should be unbiased and look at the facts and decide on the facts. But how much of the he-she bias played into this?
Oh, I think in the state of New Jersey a lot. I mean, I don't know the statistics, but the majority of the cases, the women get custody of the children and pretty much are able to do or move wherever they want, and it's just so one-sided, and it seems like it's not just in New Jersey. It seems like it's rampant throughout the world, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, even in Japan, the majority of the women get custody, and reading and researching online. I mean, in Europe too, it goes the same. It seems that women all over the world, women are more important than fathers, it seems, in society's views, and I disagree with that. I think both parents are equal, you know, as far as in how they influence their children and their rights to raise their children. It's sickening and disheartening to me that, you know, we always talk about equal rights and everybody having equal rights, but when it comes to parenting, fathers don't have equal rights.
When it comes to the country of Japan, the safe haven for parental abductors who take their children there, parents who abduct their children to Japan, some of my listeners may not, although I've covered this story time after time after time and will continue doing such, some of my listeners who may be new tonight may not understand what we're talking about, Ronald, as far as, okay, mom's going to Japan with the child, what's wrong with that? Let's cover that part of it for them, please.
Yes, absolutely. If mom relocates to Japan and she refuses to adhere to any of the agreements or the visitation rights of the, well, we won't even say moms, but the left behind parent, if she doesn't adhere to any of that, then there's no recourse in Japan. I mean, the Japanese court is full of racism and usually side most of, pretty much, I would say 98% of the time, sides with the Japanese person and not the foreigner that goes to their court system. And so basically they allow their citizens to abduct foreign children or, you know, children with dual nationalities. And that's the issue. You know, if the parent is able to relocate, it basically falls in their hands whether they want to adhere to the visitation or not. And if they choose not to, then the left behind parent is pretty much left without anything.
I ask all my guests that go through this nightmare where they lose a child and to Japan in most cases, and I'll ask you again, what has your government, we're not talking the courts, your government done to help you with this as a citizen of the United States?
Nothing at all. I had hopes in the Supreme Court of the United States, and the last bit of hope I cling on to is if they will hear my case when we petition them to hear my case. And at this point, nothing's been done to protect my citizen, I mean, my rights as a citizen, or my daughter's, my baby. I'm losing my baby, who is an American citizen, who was born and raised here. And they failed to protect her rights, too.
She does have rights, and
does, but they don't. But our government and the court systems here just don't seem to care. I think they're more important. They focus more on the fact that we have a great business relationship with Japan, and they don't want to stir up any garbage.
We need to get this story out as much as we possibly can. I've been doing my part. Have you contacted other news agencies, publicists, etc.? You and I have talked off air about this, and I've been trying to help you a little bit with that. This is a story that needs to be told. It's not just your story. There are lots of stories out there of this tragedy. It's just an absolute tragedy to see good folks like yourself having to go through this and lose your child.
Absolutely. I have reached out, and I'm still continuing to reach out. Nothing has come about it yet. I mean, my lawyer said about a month ago that People Magazine contacted her, but they've never gotten back in touch with her. And I just, we need more mainstream media to tackle this issue. And it isn't just about me. I'm hurting, but I know I'm hurting for hundreds and hundreds of people in this country. Not just people that have been taken to Japan, their kids have been taken to Japan, all over the world.
Right.
All over the world. And these other foreign countries don't want to adhere or to, they don't want to help. They don't want to help. They just turn a blind eye to this whole situation of child abduction. They really do.
It's an epidemic, and it needs to be stopped. Before I let you go, Ronald, if you had a minute here to pass on a message to your daughter, what would that be? And in fact, go ahead and do it.
Justine, I love you so much, and I know I'll see you again When, I don't know, but I love you, and I know you'll never forget us, your family here, your brother, your stepbrother, and your stepmom. And we all love you, and we're all devastated. We're all devastated. It's like cutting off one of our arms, not having you around.
It's okay. It's okay, Ronald. Listen, stay in touch with me. I'm going to work very hard to get your story out there. And, you know, you may have lost faith in the court system, and I don't blame you for that at all. But do not lose faith in your child. And I can tell from you and I talking about her that you haven't and never will. And hopefully we all pray that this will be worked out for you someday. Thanks for coming on the program.
Thank you very much, Dana.
Stay in touch with me.
I will.
Okay, bye-bye. Wow, that's Ronald McKinnon. You know, put yourself in that position. What are these governments doing? United States government, Canadian government. I've done 10 shows on this now with 10 different parents. I could do 100 different shows with 100 different parents. The mainstream media needs to grab this, and they need to publicize the hell out of it, because you can hear the hurt in this man's voice, and it just tears you apart. Okay, got about 5 minutes left, and that means 5 minutes of phone calls at 306-842-7884. 306-842-7884. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. And remember, our new webpage is at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. That's www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. And I encourage you, the listener, to get a hold of your mainstream media folks. Tell them about this program. Let them hear Ronald McKinnon on the air. And tell them that maybe they're not interested in the story. No, it's a good story. This is a story that needs to be shared. This is a story that needs to be told. And I'm going to keep telling it, and I'm going to do as many shows as I possibly can in my venue here to try and help these people. I don't care where they're from. But when their child is taken from them to a sanctuary country, something is wrong. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm calling about the Ronald McKinnon case.
Yes, sir.
My name is Eric Kelmis.
Hi, Eric.
I've gotten to know Ron pretty well through this. I'm fighting a case currently that involves losing a child. I had a child that was abducted years ago. And a lot of problems that are going on in the United States government right now. And I just want to make sure that people in the United States really understand the pain.
Yeah.
That we go through, and the lack of support we get from any government agency. And I just want everybody to understand how devastating it is, how Ron did everything in through the government, through the court system. He followed the American way, but the American way never stood up for him.
No.
It's just so awful that it's even hard for me to discuss. I told Ron the other day when we were talking on the phone, God damn it, Ron, I wish I never heard your name.
Yeah.
I wish I didn't know who you were. I wish that you and I weren't crying with each other on the phone every day. But I'm glad that I've got Ron around because he understands what I'm going through.
It's an epidemic. It's one that sickens my stomach every time I hear the story and makes me want to question the system and the rights and protections of citizens of all countries who have been losing their children to these sanctuary countries. It's just plain wrong.
There's one real issue that allows this to continue, and that's the fact that as Americans, we don't understand that this can even be something that occurs in the world because it's so against our values system that we can't understand how it can happen. So one of the things I've done in fighting this is I've put together a few short films, and the latest one I did is basically to help people understand what this issue creates in the world and in the lives of all the left behind parents. And you can view my films on YouTube. If you go to youtube.com/ekalmus, it's youtube.com/ekalmus. I have one film called Face the Truth and facethetruth.net. If you go there, you'll be directed to a website called CRN Japan, which is the Children's Rights Network of Japan. And more people need to understand this. Once people understand it, then they can help make the changes that need to be made in the judiciary. When people stand up and they back Larry Sinclair on his Parent Act, so that the judiciary gets the training they need to understand how to handle these cases, so that our children are not taken away anymore.
Amen. That's well said. Thanks for calling, Eric.
Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye. 306-842-7884. I encourage you to check out the resources, listen to my programs, look at these cases. It breaks your heart, man, I'll tell you. I see this and it makes you so fortunate that you're not going through something like this. And if you were going through something like this, how you could stay sane. And it doesn't matter if it's a case like this or a missing persons case or a child being abducted. This is a case where, you know, your country isn't helping you. The country that you live in is not helping you. Bottom line, you hear the emotion in these phone calls. You hear the emotion in these interviews. We try to tell the story, and we need to get it backed up and in the mainstream media. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Dana, it's Red. Hi, are you?
Hi, Red. I'm good, but you know, every time I do one of these stories, it just, I go from, my emotions go from, totally wanting to help to totally angry to, you know, I wish I could take some of these legislators by the neck and just shake them and say, wake up and start helping your citizens, because it's an epidemic, and it's one that people don't know about, and damn the media for not covering it, because it's an important story.
I mean, it's shocking. It's shocking in many ways, but then again, it isn't when we take a look sometimes, whether it be at our media, who's more, have their head up their asses, for a better term,
yeah.
Covering stories that they think are somehow important. I mean, a perfect example, Dana, is, you know, the stories that you did tonight. I mean, you know, even the one that we do with Chip, who scarily enough says he's in the industry for 51 years, that made me feel real old.
I know, me too.
but he's respectful what he does. I mean, it's not like the other night where, you know, you're talking, you know, it's not like you're doing segments where you're talking about a missing person or you're talking about, you know, a father losing their child or talking about things, and then all of a sudden you decide to do, you know, a story on a porn site.
Yeah.
Much like Geraldo did this past weekend. But it's just one of those things where, and I think people are going to have to start to understand, and I think your second guest said it perfectly, people have to understand who is looking out for them.
Yep.
It is not the mainstream media. The mainstream media is looking out after their advertising dollars. The people, there are organizations in this country that really truly care. There are, you know, there are the people that help other families. There are people that search for people. There are people that want to put the news out. And, you know, it really is got to get to the point where families start really going and putting their stories out there, and if it's on the internet, it's on the internet, because honestly, more people read on the internet than people who watch television, because television is not going to give the normal person the time of day to be able to get their tragic story out unless, you know, they fit that model that they think is a recipe for success. And that is a sad state of affairs, but it's true.
Yeah.
The government, on the other hand, they are shameful in their own rights, and both parties should be ashamed of themselves. They're more worried about fundraising. They're more worried about ridiculous nonsense than they are about their own citizens. They just don't care. They'll deal with their lobbyists more than they'll deal with the actual people who are supposed to be their constituents, and that's just a bureaucratic mess in its own right. And that is shameful. That no one, I mean, ooh, it was tough to listen to that last interview.
Yep.
It really, really was.
Yep. No, I know, and I knew that was coming. And I've talked to, well, this is the second time I've had Ronald on, and I'll have him on more. And you just want to help so much. And when he contacted me, I said, oh, damn right, you come on this program and let's talk about what's going on. And you can feel that, and I've had other guests on too, you can feel that emotion coming right through the telephone and tugging at your heart. And if that doesn't mean something, if that isn't a way to get the people interested, then I don't know what is. I suppose I can dress up in a blonde wig and a mini skirt and have an ankle bracelet on my ankle, like Rob Schneider did, to come on and make fun of Lindsay Lohan on The Tonight Show. I laughed my butt off when I seen that because he made a good statement there.
Mm-hmm.
But then it angers you so much that when you turn on the news, there she is again. And Ronald McKinnon isn't, and he should be.
Well, and even Ronald said during the interview, I mean, this isn't just about Ronald McKinnon.
No.
This is a big issue.
Yep.
This is something that when you have judges making these kind of ridiculous decisions, they're setting precedent for future parents. And it doesn't matter whether, you know, it's the father or whether it's a mother. If your child is all of a sudden fair game to just be able to leave the United States, and, you know, I mean, what's going to happen at this point? You know damn well that something's going to, she wouldn't be doing this if she wasn't trying to sever ties.
Yep.
Let's just face it. And the fact of the matter of what's going to happen next is, next thing, he won't be able to get in touch with his child.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what are the courts going to say in this country at this point? It's not our jurisdiction. She doesn't live in the United States.
Yeah.
I mean, you really got to wonder at this point. We can't keep the friggin' illegal aliens out of our country, and we can't keep our own citizens in our country.
Yep.
I mean, what the hell point does the federal government do at this point of what the Constitution says that what is their absolute right of what they are supposed to do for our citizens? Mm. They're not doing any of it.
You're right.
I mean, how are they protecting anybody at this point when we have a border that's like a sieve?
Yep.
And then we have rulings like this where everyone's just like, okay, take the child out of the country. That's fine.
Yeah, I know.
Now we're going to see him again. Okay, that's fine. Great.
It's heartbreaking for sure. Just before I let you go, I want to commend you and Dugga and everybody else on the improvements to scaredmonkeys.com and the radio page. You guys have kicked butt, and it's a job well done, and you deserve a lot of credit for that.
Well, it's a work in process right now, and Dugga has been working feverishly. We let him sleep sometimes.
An hour or two now and then. Yeah.
But, you know, we've got stories to tell.
Yep.
I mean, we've got to be able to reach a greater audience on so many issues. And, you know that we've all talked about some of the things that, you know, you're going to be doing that are going to be a little bit different in the future. So, I mean, it's not like, it's not like the changes are done, that's for sure. It was kind of like renovating a house where all of a sudden, you know, you pull up the carpet and you're like, oh boy, we got more to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's an ongoing process, and it's all for the purpose of trying to get out more and more stories and hopefully provide a forum for people with these kinds of issues and problems where they can get their story out to the public, and the American public can start to understand that the television media is not the only people and not the only place where they can go to anymore. The internet is the new media vehicle, and they've got to do their part too in trying to get their stories out. And we're going to do our best. I know you're going to do your best, Dana.
Well said, sir. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dana. You have a great evening.
Take care, bud. Bye bye. And that's it. That's the Dana Pretzer Show for, what is this, Tuesday, August 7th, 2007. Special thanks go to my guest, Stan Livingston, from the Actor's Journey Project. And get that episode of My Three Sons and check him out as Chip. He's the only child star that hasn't been in rehab. No, that's not true. Lots haven't been. Brooke Hart, my buddy, the attorney for Dog the Bounty Hunter, who will be a guest on this program coming up very soon. Ronald McKinnon and LaDonna Meredith. Remember, our webpage is www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live, daily commentaries, get podcasts, and all that neat kind of stuff. Thank you for listening. I really appreciate you tuning in. You can contact me by emailing me at dana@scaredmonkeys.com, and we'll see you again real soon here on the Scared Monkeys Radio Network. Good night.